in this special breaking news edition of Red Meat, a collection of the tastiest tidbits from Odyssey's conservative news talk stations across the country. Tara Servatius from WORD Radio learns from Congressman Ralph Norman how the Freedom Caucus plans to vote on President Donald Trump's big, beautiful budget bill. And it's not good news for the president. Here's what he said.
Real quick, Representative Norman, it scared me personally to watch the bond market wobble a few weeks ago when it wasn't clear for a while people were going to keep buying our bonds. You know what happens if our bonds, our treasuries are not bought, people who own them might start dumping them. We could have an absolute crash of the dollar. That's how much trouble the spending by Congress is getting this country into. I mean, this is why Trump's in Saudi Arabia right now groveling to Al-Qaeda in Syria, because the head of Saudi Arabia wants him to, and we're just praying OPEC keeps up the petrodollar so the whole thing doesn't crash. I mean, it could happen any moment. We saw that with the wobbling of the bond market. Do people in Congress not read the news? Do they not? Maybe they don't understand the news. How much danger they're putting the dollar and the solvency of the entire American financial system in with this printing? I mean, it's not just greed. It's not just high interest rates. It is really legitimately terrifying. Are they just financially illiterate? Don't care? I've always wanted to know. What do you think?
Again, combination of the two. A lot of them are illiterate. I mean, when you talk about bonds, and you've got to have a buyer for bonds. I asked Kevin Roberts. I had the conservative opportunist, and he heads up Heritage. I said, and our group asked, what's it going to take to wake up Congress to know that we've got a serious financial crisis now? And he said a complete crash. When we wake up one day and nobody wants to buy our bonds, much less, you know, with the Treasury, if interest rates tick up 1%, we're in trouble. If it's over 4%, we've got a problem. But we're going to wake up one day and debt's going to override anything we do. And you're right. We are proposing the 1.5 trillion cuts with hopefully two. It's a teardrop in the ocean. We ought to be cutting, you know, 15, 20 trillion, but the appetite's just not there. And, you know, unfortunately, the bottom line, a lot of these guys Republicans are just weak. They are scared of not coming back, alienating part of their constituency. And it's beyond that now. We've got to make the cuts, and we're doing what we can, but we're going to hold this thing up. If we don't have Medicaid reform where we get illegals off the list, that's going to help South Carolina and really
hold on
all
just
the
a
states.
Sec. Hold on, stop the music, Tim. You just said something, Ralph Norman. Can you stay with me for a minute? I just got to ask you right now. You said we're going to hold this thing up. Freedom Caucus is going to hold this thing up because you're breaking news right now.
Well, what we're going to do if it ends up like I think it is, if they're not really, if they're delaying implementing a lot of these rules, we're going to vote against it. And
the Freedom Caucus?
Yeah. Yes. And other members, not just us. I'm all ahead of budget. Jody Arrington has done a great job. But we got a meeting today. We're going to decide we either do what we say we're going to do, or we're just going to hold it up and sit up here and sit as long as it takes to get at least these menial things passed. And not 4 years down the road. What they're trying to do, Tara, is put it off. Even on the illegals with Medicaid, put it off 4 years. Well, why 4 years? We can't bind another administration. So, but the good news is, I don't want to be that pessimistic. The good news is we've got a commander-in-chief that's doing the right things.
Yes.
But we've got to back him up and convince him that this is critical to do. And the president's got the big picture. A lot of the details we're going to inform him on, because it's that serious. And, you know, I don't want to have to wait to a crisis where no one buys our bonds.
Yeah.
We're stuck. And that's when we're going to realize the cancer will have spread so far that I don't know how we revive the patient, if for lack of a better description.
So just to be clear, you're saying you will hold up Trump's big, beautiful bill over this. And
yes.
Not just you, the Freedom Caucus. You're talking about the Freedom Caucus.
Yeah, all we can lose is three. We're not getting any help from the Democrat Party. And you got a couple that are not going to vote for it for different reasons. But this is legitimate, and hopefully we need President Trump's help to get on the phone and call those who are holdouts and use his leverage, which he has.
Ralph Norman, Representative Ralph Norman, what you did signing that letter with the other 16 took a tremendous amount of courage. What you're saying to me right now takes a lot of courage. No one else in our delegation is doing it. Testament to that. I just want to personally take a moment to thank you.
Well, it's such a, you know, we have a great country. We've got to protect it. And debt is going to kill us if we don't deal with it.
Yeah, it will. All right, I'm out of time. Representative Norman, thank you so much for joining us this morning on 98.9 WORD.
Now let's discuss the fiscal challenges facing the United States, particularly the growing national debt and the impending insolvency of Social Security and Medicare trust funds. Maya McGinnis, the president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, talked to Tommy Tucker at WWL in New Orleans about the need for bipartisan action to address these issues before they lead to severe consequences.
Let me begin by asking, are you now or have you ever been associated with the Communist Party?
The Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget is a bipartisan group, and those are not that common these days in Washington, but we are a group that's not about politics at all, but purely about policy and fiscal policy and worrying about our national debt and trying to work with lawmakers and educate people about the importance of attending to it, dealing with something, because our debt is quickly headed toward record levels. So we're trying to put a cap on that.
Let's talk about where it is now, and then we'll talk about the, quote, big, beautiful reconciliation bill.
So for a little context, we're starting in a moment where there are warning signs about our fiscal situation everywhere you look. Our debt as a share of GDP is about 100%, and that is close to the record. In 4 years, we'll hit the record that we've had in this country, which we set just after World War II, having just fought a world war. Our interest payments are now the fastest growing part of the federal budget and the second largest item. Only thing we spend more money on than interest is Social Security. And it's been demonstrated that countries that spend more on interest than national defense, it is a sign of their weakening role in the world. And two of the biggest concerns out there are that Social Security and Medicare both have trust funds that are headed towards insolvency, which means when they don't have the cash to pay the promised benefits, and Social Security benefits will be cut across the board for every recipient immediately, and providers will lose some of their payments in Medicare. So these are things we have to attend to, but we are not on track to be making them better, unfortunately.
When would that happen with the Social Security and the trust fund, and when would people be looking at a Social Security cut? Because I got to tell you, my all hell's going to break loose when that happens. You realize that, don't you?
You know, I have to say my level of frustration on this one is so huge because we have known about the problem for decades. Every year, there are trustees of the program, and they put out an annual report. It's dry, it's boring, but I encourage everybody to take a look at it because they warn, and right now, it's 9 years from now, and that is not a long time when you're planning retirement, 9 years from now that we are headed towards an across-the-board benefit cut. And we have known about it for decades. And if we had made changes earlier, they would have been so small, actually very few people would have even noticed. We would have protected everybody who depends on the program. But with every year that we wait, it becomes more difficult to make these changes. And yet we have politicians who promise not to touch the program, which means don't fix it. And actually, we are starting an effort to ask our politicians to tell the truth about Social Security. There are lots of ways to fix it, but the one thing we have to agree on is we have to start fixing on it because waiting till the last minute could be dire for recipients if they have those across-the-board benefit cuts, or terrible if suddenly you hike taxes massively on the working population, which is already feeling overstretched as it is.
Either way, the economy is going to be affected and people are going to be affected, and I just, Maya, have this vision of you got more and more people retiring, the boomers retiring, right? A tail end of the boomers, I guess.
Yeah.
Less savings than ever, depending more on Social Security than ever. Meanwhile, you got this other train headed in that direction of Social Security insolvency and cuts to the program. And I just think that's going to be one hell of a crash when that happens because people are going to be more dependent on Social Security than ever. And that's when it's going to be cut. Thoughts?
That's right. A large portion of seniors, and seniors are becoming a larger portion of the population, depend on Social Security for most or all of their income. The worst thing we could do is do nothing. And I really encourage people, like, we have to ask our politicians to start talking about this and telling the truth. And the only unacceptable answer, because there's plenty of ways to change it, and we can discuss that. We actually have an interactive tool on our website where you can go and look at how you would change it. There's no right or wrong answer. I will say one thing that I think politicians are pretty united on is protecting benefits for current retirees. They're not going to change the benefits of anybody who's already retired. Mm-hmm. So there are these tactics that scare seniors and make them think that we shouldn't do anything. But we should be asking our politicians, how are you going to fix the program? Because it's incumbent on them to be making changes. And I just agree with you. The outrage, if we get to that last minute and this were to happen, is sort of unimaginable at a time where there's already a lot of outrage. People are already losing trust.
Wait, you said you disagree with me or you agree with me?
I agree with you.
Yeah, all hell's going to break loose.
And people would be right to be very frustrated that politicians had known about this problem and not fixed it. So we got to get we're fixing it. It's not impossible, but we got to start as quickly as possible.
What is the website, the interactive website, Maya, that people can go to safely, not while you're driving, but safely if you're at a computer?
I am not driving, and I know my website.
No, not you. I'm saying the people that are listening.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. I was like,
not you.
Yes. Nobody go on it now. We're called the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget. The website CRFB with that memorable acronym CRFBA, mm-hmm. Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. You Google it, it pops up, and we have a bunch of interactive tools. I think they're really interesting because there are a lot of myths out there about what things would or wouldn't fix Social Security or the overall debt. We have one, and you can look at them and look at the policies. And again, we are very nonpartisan. So if you're a small government conservative, if you're a big government progressive, whatever somebody's preference, we're just saying we need to not borrow so much and keep increasing our national debt, and our politicians need to work to make some actual hard choices and budget and put us on a path towards solvency for Social Security, but also for the country.
Let me take a break. When we come back, we'll pick it up. And look, to be clear, this is not a Republican or a Democrat thing because they all spend whatever you give them, or more than you give them. Is that accurate?
Yep, that's right. This problem was created by both parties, absolutely, and it will need a bipartisan fix.
And along those lines, I want to talk about, we do want to talk about the reconciliation bill, but I want to talk about something you said that got my attention about interest and defense spending, how if the interest outpaces defense spending, how that could pose a national security problem to the country, okay?
Yep, great.
Right. Maya McGinnis is our guest, president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Y'all, the only comparison I can make is that we know there's a Category 5 storm out there, and we're just pretending that it's not out there as it relates to Social Security, and we're hoping it'll go away or something will change or this, the other thing, rather than taking the necessary precautions. And that would be, with this analogy, presuming you could do something about a storm. This you can do something about. A storm, perhaps you can't, but ignoring it, it's not going to make it go away. 620 traffic now, WWL. Hi, 626. Now, Tommy Tucker, WWO, back with Maya McGinnis, president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. You're going to have to come back, Maya, because there's never enough time. Let's talk about, before we get to the big, quote, beautiful reconciliation bill that is going to add tremendously to the debt and deficit. Let's talk about the dangers of the interest payments on the debt exceeding defense spending and how that could pose a national security problem to the country.
Yeah, for most of the time that I've been doing this, which is quite some time now, the main reason that we worried about budget deficits was economic. Borrowing too much shrinks the economy. It means it doesn't grow as quickly. There's a lower standard of living. We earn less. It has big effects throughout the economy. And it also means that we're not as prepared for emergencies, whether a pandemic or a recession. But now that has been overtaken by concerns about the national debt's effect on national security. And the situation we're in is we have to borrow so much every year, and much of that borrowing comes from abroad. And outside of the U.S., the second largest holder of our debt is China. And it's become quite obvious we have poor relations with China. And their ownership of treasuries and our dependence on them to borrow more is now a national security weakness. So if we have a tension with them, if there is something that, you know, we decided we want to protect Taiwan, we would have to borrow money from China in order to afford protection of Taiwan. And I laugh, but it doesn't feel funny. It feels incredibly vulnerable. Our defense budget
Go ahead.
Has gone down in the past, and there are signs it may have to go up for things like cyber and other new risks that are out there. Hopefully there's a lot of savings within the budget also, but our budget doesn't have the flexibility to make the kinds of investments we need for new threats at any one time. So all our over-borrowing of the past has left us incredibly vulnerable at a time where there's so many tensions around the world, much worse than it was a decade ago.
Behind the scenes, the China ownership of U.S. Treasuries had a little bit to do with the tariff negotiations, did they not?
What do you mean?
Well, in terms of leverage for the United States, where the Chinese were, I thought I read that they were either dumping treasuries or thinking about dumping treasuries. Which...
So I think, yes, we were afraid there was a risk of them dumping treasuries. And we've been concerned about that a couple times during the trade war, during President Trump's first term. That was also a concern that it is a point of leverage that they have. And so we have seen people getting rid of treasuries and diversifying away from the dollar all over the place, China and other countries. It appears it's hard to know from the data who owns what, but because they're worried about the tariffs and they want to be not as dependent on the U.S. And so there has been a change that has already showed how if interest rates go up, if people sell treasuries, which will push interest rates up, that will then translate into much higher interest payments for the federal government, which, as we already discussed, are already the second largest item in the budget. So anything that pushes people away from buying our treasuries makes our own debt more expensive. We've had this incredible luxury where interest rates have been very low. And if they go up, it hurts households who have to borrow. And it also hurts the federal government that has to pay interest, which in turn hurts households again. So it's a double whammy.
Maya, in the 30 seconds we have left, how can the gentleman from Louisiana, Mike Johnson or Steve Scalise, look into the camera and say this is good for the American public, this reconciliation bill?
They can't. Everybody will try. And again, this is a bipartisan issue, but there is nobody.
Well, they're the leadership. That's the only reason I said
that. No. I know. I'm saying this. Democrats have made this mistake before, too. But we should not pass legislation that adds to the debt. The way these bills are crafted, they still add to the debt. We should only be signing into law legislation that reduces the debt. And in this instance, there's not enough spending cuts to offset the tax cuts. And they're claiming there's growth. That is much higher than anybody else believes there will be. We got to be honest, and we have to make some real choices. We have to budget. So we should not sign legislation that will make this debt situation worse. It's already a big problem.
So where should we be spending money? Let's go back to Tara to discuss the vulnerability of U.S. infrastructure, including water treatment facilities, nuclear plants, and the electrical grid to Chinese cyber attacks. Plus, there's child trafficking at the border. And what did the Biden administration do to fight that? Here's more.
FBI under even Christopher Wray admitted, United States of America, vulnerable to Chinese hacks. They're in our water treatment facilities. They're in our nuclear facilities, literally digitally inside. In our grid, which they could bring down parts of it at will if they wanted to. Wall Street shrugged its shoulders. Oh, well. Then in December, we just found out about this a few weeks ago, Biden administration's meeting with the Chinese delegation. And for the first time, they confessed, brought it up, volunteered, by the way, weren't even asked, that they were behind Volt Typhoon, a cyber attack by a group of Chinese hackers identified last year by Microsoft. And they let the Biden administration know it was punishment. It was punishment for our support of Taiwan, and they'd be willing to do it again. They're very casual. Again, they're in our water treatment plants, they're in our grid, and they're in our nuke plants. This is a hostage situation. And Wall Street shrugged and went, oh, well, who cares? We don't need water. What we need is more cheap stuff to stack up in our garages. Unbelievable. Well, now we're finding out that U.S. officials are finding rogue communications devices in Chinese power inverters. Devices that are not supposed to be there and could theoretically shut down parts of our grid. You know what's incredible about this? The absolute lack of will to live by the American people. Truly, especially our leaders, just don't care. Kill us, don't. Oh, well, whatever. Folks, how long could we go if those water treatment plants went down? How long, folks, all of the delivery of your food is based on logistics. How long could we go if those systems melted down? It'd be mass chaos. How many days of food you got? Bet you China knows. Bet you China knows. Well, now we've just found more. In our solar power inverters, these solar panels that generate power. By the way, folks, a lot of the power in D.C., hilariously. D.C. Electrical grid runs on AC power. A solar inverter converts D.C. power into AC power. They have embedded these inverters that not only would shut off the solar panels, grind the system to a halt, could shut down larger parts of the grid as well. The equipment is hooked up to the grid. That's why. The rogue components provide additional undocumented communication channels that allow firewalls to be circumvented remotely. So it comes with this equipment already embedded in it. Quote, with potentially catastrophic consequences. Unquote. Folks, all of this was before Trump's trade war. Using the rogue communications devices to skirt firewalls and switch off inverters remotely or change their settings could destabilize entire power grids, damage energy infrastructure, and trigger widespread blackouts. Yeah, but what are the prices on Temu right now? This is not a way forward. This idea that we're just going to trade with China and it's all going to be very normal is not a way forward. This is from Laura Ingraham's interview with Josh Hawley almost 2 months ago now, Senator Josh Hawley.
The Wall Street Journal is reporting that in a December meeting that hadn't been really publicized before, Chinese officials acknowledged implicitly that Beijing was behind a widespread series of alarming cyber attacks in the United States on infrastructure. And they talked about computer networks, U.S. ports, water utilities, airports, other targets. The U.S. official said it was one of the things that kept them up at night. And China saying, well, essentially they did this because of U.S. support for Taiwan. This is startling.
Yes.
Yeah.
A tacit admission on their part.
Yeah, it's outrageous. I mean, the truth is the Biden administration knew very well that China was behind these cyber attacks. There's the Salt Typhoon attack, which is China getting into our digital infrastructure, getting into our communications grid. They're still there, by the way, Laura. What did the Biden administration do about it? Nothing. I mean, this is the problem. For years, China has been eating our lunch, stealing our jobs, taking our industries, taking our technology, cheating on trade. Joe Biden didn't do a thing. He couldn't be woken up to do anything about it. And now Donald Trump is getting serious. He's actually protecting this country, protecting our jobs, bringing back industry. That's what we need him to do. And the liberals are going crazy and they're going nuts because they know he's right. They don't have any answer for it. They know he's right. They know this is what needs to happen and the president's on top of it.
Yeah, this is not a way forward, folks. And look, moving the manufacturer of all those Apple iPhones out of China into India is something that has to happen. If we can't make it affordably here, or we can't do it now affordably here, we need to move all this stuff out. It's got to go. It's not a way forward. Where we just shrug our shoulders till the grid goes down. And folks, when the grid goes down, you know what we'll do? We won't point a finger at China. No, Democrats will point a finger at Republicans. Republicans will point a finger at Democrats. Everyone will scream. No one will hear them since the grid will be down. And we'll just go on. And China will laugh at us the whole way. Folks, you know who gets this is Marco Rubio. And I think Trump. Trump's not going to say this because he can't. Rubio can. We need to decouple entirely from China. It's not good enough to cut a trade deal and go on as we are, because the second that Democrats get back into office, they're going to let them run wild. They're going to let them do whatever they want. You take down the grid. Oh, well, we don't care as long as the $30 million check to the Biden family, cashes and goes through. No one cares. No one cares. Unbelievable. So yet another instance of grid destroying, grid blacking out, grid shutting down infrastructure shipped right to our stores. And we're so stupid, we buy it. We buy it and install it. One of the things President Trump pledged to do was to fine the 300,000 trafficked children. We know many of them were brought in by the cartels and international gangs to traffic and sell for sex. And for slavery, they work them on factory floors. That was when there was only 80,000. The Biden administration not only didn't stop it after the New York Times article, they doubled down. In fact, they did the most horrible thing ever. They ended DNA testing at the border. The last hope these kids had of somebody picking up on the fact that they were actually a kidnapped Guatemalan six-year-old not entering the country with their father. DNA test would have told us that. I'm convinced that's why Democrats fought the kids in cages so hard. The kids were put in cages because as soon as they showed up, and they weren't cages, Obama used them too, as soon as they showed up, they would be separated from the adult they were with because they didn't know if the adult was abusing them or was legitimately their dad. And the DNA test would tell the tale. DNA test also creates a record that is public. When whistleblowers within the Department of Homeland Security started screaming that the DNA testing wasn't being done, they were sidelined, pulled off their programs. This DNA testing is very important to the Democrats, i.e. that it never be done. Why is that? For some reason, they don't want Team Trump to find these kids. Here's former Fox News investigative reporter Brianna Morello. She left Fox when she didn't want to take the mRNA vaccine. Started her own outfit. She says only 5% of the trafficked children have been found so far because the Biden administration deliberately gave the Trump administration fake addresses for where these kids are. Take a listen.
So what DHS and HSI is dealing with right now is they've been given fraudulent addresses, and it's in regards to where those children were going to be sent to when they did some digging and tried to check up on these kids. Well, in a lot of cases, these addresses didn't even exist. There's no houses there. It was something simple that the Biden administration could have looked into, but they decided not to. And I'm also told by my sources that a lot of these sponsors were poorly vetted by the Biden regime. We knew what was happening for a very long time right now, and that was the Biden administration was participating in one of the biggest human trafficking scandals. It's going to be a black eye in American history, and it's very, very unfortunate, of course. But again, none of these people are going to be held accountable, you know. But there's very little being done on all of this, and it's absolutely heartbreaking because we don't know where these kids are. But a lot of experts believe that these kids are either being sex trafficked or they're being used for slave labor. It's absolutely heartbreaking because there's a lot of great people over at HSI and they really want to help find these children. But unfortunately, they don't have the material to do just that because they were intentionally given false information.
Okay, so after the New York Times story, I don't know if you remember this, I played a lot of the audio. We had a woman, Democrat, liberal, who volunteered at Health and Human Services to help reunite these kids with their family members who were coming to pick them up. Good liberal, thinks this is all wonderful, loves illegal immigrants. Until she noticed the same gang members were coming to pick them up every week. And it was weird. Like, one would say he was an uncle, but he'd be 22 and she'd be 16. And it was the same ones, week after week after week. No vetting. Here, have a six-year-old. That's how it operated. And it's clear, Morello says, the Biden administration does not want the Trump administration, did not want the Trump administration as they were coming in during the transition to find these kids.
I have to say that this was intentional at this point, because when you look back at who came forward to report this years ago, it's people like DHS whistleblower Aaron Stevenson, who said that he was well aware and DHS was well aware under the Biden administration that these children were being shuffled off to likely the cartels and they were being trafficked here. And he tried his very best to come out and speak out on this issue, but the mainstream media never covered it. and all of his efforts really kind of just fell. Nobody wanted to pick up the pieces and help him out. I know there was a couple of members in the GOP who did actively sound interested in this, but nobody did anything. This was all preventable. So we could sit here and say that, yes, maybe this was incompetency, but that's letting them off easy. I believe this was intentional. There's no way they didn't understand what was going on. They had several instances where they could have just shut this all down, and they chose not to. I'll give you another example. As many of you guys at home are well aware, during President Trump's first term, he was conducting DNA testing, and he was trying to test the DNA of these migrant children to make sure as they were coming over as family units that they actually did belong with the adults who were bringing them in. Now, unfortunately, Joe Biden decided to stop all of that, and he put an end to it. And so what happened as a result of that? Well, how many children were passed off to people that weren't their family members? How many children were shuffled into this country with fake family units, and they weren't family units at all? These kids needed our assistance. So yes, at some point we have to be honest and say that Joe Biden intentionally set these kids up. Now, obviously, you and I both know he wasn't running the White House at the time. So it's the people behind him who are really involved in this. But I think it's one of the many reasons why they're going so aggressively hard on people like Ed Martin, who's been nominated for the U.S. attorney for D.C. They don't want you to figure out how deep this swamp goes and to see who is really calling the shots behind all of this. And people like Ed Martin are the individuals who will get us to that point where we find out these answers.
Right. And that's, of course, why Tom Tillis, part of why Tom Tillis blocked him, just they don't, swamp doesn't want the digging. Okay. It's not just investigative reporter, former Fox News investigative reporter, Brianna Morello saying this, RFK Jr., cryptically said this the other day. Health and Human Services, the department he runs, has been used as a vector for child trafficking.
We have ended HHS as the role, as the vector, the principal vector in this country for child trafficking. And during the Biden administration, HHS became a collaborator in child trafficking and for sex and for slavery. And we have ended that, and we're very aggressively going out and trying to find these children, the 300,000 children that were lost by the Biden administration.
Wow. Where might they be? I mean, 300,000 kids. There's a lot of kids that disappear. What is Brianna Morello hearing?
But all of them just love to sit here and pretend like President Trump was separating families at the time, and it was very convenient. But how many families were separated under Joe Biden when children were potentially kidnapped from their parents and taken to the border because, well, these human smugglers wanted to sex traffic them into the United States? That's a legitimate question that we should all be asking, because I have a feeling that the numbers are going to be absolutely massive. Now, I'm deeply, deeply concerned that we're not going to be able to find at least half of these children at this point because, you know, this is a cover-up scheme, and so many people are involved in this. And I know it's a very uncomfortable topic for so many, but, you know, these children, I've got a lot of questions for. You know, there's a lot of experts who believe that organ harvesting is real and it's happening amongst children. I've had experts on my program who've detailed just that and how these kids are taken from their parents in South America and brought to Mexico and their organs are harvested. So one must wonder if that was also taking place here in the United States. You know, my sources tell me that the organ harvesting angle of all of this, that the United States is one of the biggest consumers of those organs. So again, if they could shuffle these children into our country and do just that, I'm deeply concerned that it took place and we're never going to be able to find these children again. It's just heartbreaking.
Weird, isn't it? Now, you want to know the weirdest part? Two left-wing NGOs, non-government organizations, are suing Trump, get this, to stop his migrant child trafficking crackdown, including the DNA testing. Why would you do that? Why would you take the time to do that? In February, Trump's Department of Health and Human Services issued reforms to the Unaccompanied Minors Program that resettles migrant children in the United States. You cannot pick one up unless you are legally here in the country. The reason for that was to stop the literal carousel of cartel members and gangsters from coming up every week and picking up the latest crew of six-year-olds, five-year-olds, nine-year-olds, and disappearing off into the horizon, never to be seen again with them. You now can't pick one up unless you have legitimate U.S. ID. They're suing to stop that. Let that sink in. HHS whistleblower Tara Lee Rodas testified before Congress that Health and Human Services should become a white glove delivery service where migrant children go from the Department of Homeland Security custody, turned over to adult sponsors that are not their parents or relatives. And a lot of them are the same people every week. So just, you know, show up, get a kid. Take two or three if you like. Welcome to America.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Red Meat. Don't forget to smash that subscribe button for your favorite tasty assortment of conservative audio. And follow your local Odyssey talk station to get shows from these hosts delivered daily wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, stay hungry.